Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to Screen Geeks Radio, episode 59. This is Dave.
This is Barry.
And Josh.
And joining us again this week,
Ethan!
Yay! And this time it won't take 2 weeks for your episode to come out, because that was a really funny episode.
It was. And, you know, and I think it's a good thing, Dave. That way our listeners, you know, they greet our episodes with great anticipation.
Okay, Tim Curry. Wow. Well, we aren't going to be doing an episode next week, so it's like we have to do one this week. Shall we talk about what we watched?
Yes.
Over the past, I guess, 2 weeks. Yeah.
Better not come to me first, because I'm trying to remember.
Okay.
I'll start with Beer Fest. Josh loaned me Beer Fest. He's actually trying to get me broken into the Broken Lizards. I haven't seen Club Dread yet, but I saw Beer Fest last
you
night.
You need to.
Okay, well, I will. Yeah, I like Beer Fest. Incredibly stupid, but gosh, the stuff that was funny is just so fall down funny. And Super Troopers, I thought it was kind of rough for a first movie, but the funny stuff I thought made it all worth it. But so far, Beer Fest is my favorite.
I think that's kind of funny that you think Beer Fest is better. Do you even think it dragged at all?
Honestly, no, but I watched the deleted scenes, and it was like, it's amazing, because I think the original cut must have been about 4 hours long. The deleted scenes are like a movie unto itself. It's like, wow, they had so many scenes of people drinking beer, like so many extra scenes. But no, I actually didn't think it dragged at all.
I really paid the extras.
Right. But I really dug it. And I love all the jokes about Das Boot and, you know, and Jürgen Prochnow is in it. So yeah, no, I thought it was really funny.
Well, the whole, aren't they like in a submarine, like in Colorado?
Right.
Get that in the... It's pretty awesome.
And okay.
Of course, the bear outfit and Super Troopers. I forgot about that.
Oh, but gosh. The frogs in Premier Beer Fest were the equivalent of them. So.
Did you like the characters better in Beer Fest 2 than the ones in Super Troopers?
I liked Favre better in Super Troopers, but... No, I like the character. I thought they were very likable. My favorite characters in Beer Fest were the evil cousins, the German cousins.
Okay.
I thought they were hysterical. And Will Forte from Saturday Night Live is one of them. Yeah, I thought that they, for me, were just the funniest thing about the movie.
I saw The Mummy 3.
Tomb of the
Dragon Emperor. You know, as I was watching it and really noticing how bad it was, I was actually enjoying seeing Brendan Fraser again. And so for that matter, like, I thought it was a lot better than Indy.
Wow.
So,
what another. It's months later, still slapping the kingdom.
Well, I mean. But I mean, it had decent special effects.
Did you love the Yetis? Were they great?
So stupid. I mean, it was a cool scene, but like, where do they come from? She just goes off in the corner.
Why did they make the it's good symbol? Like, football?
It's right. They kick this guy into a field goal, and then the Yetis are like. And do like the goal sign. Well, she just like runs over like in a corner and is like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And all the Yetis come out.
Right.
It's like, where did that come from? And like all the different creatures that Jet Li like transforms into. I don't know. It's pretty stupid.
He transforms into like a koala bear. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, what was that thing? I was like, is that from where the wild things are? Like, what is that?
But you know, the next time I'm up in the Colorado Rockies, I'm going to try to summon Yetis just like,
do it.
Like she does.
Do it. Go for it. Yeah.
The thing that pissed me off the most, though, was at the very end of the movie, like for no reason at all, when... What's the drunk cousin's name?
Jonathan.
Jonathan is leaving with the pearl or whatever. And he's like, I'm going to Peru. There won't be any mummies there. And he drives away. And all of a sudden this subtitle comes up and goes, there were mummies found in Peru. Like they were trying to do another movie.
Right. Oh, yeah. And they will, because this one made a lot of bank.
Oh, did it?
It did really well, yeah.
Why?
Because it's summertime. People want to get in. They need air conditioning.
Like when I went to see Stardust and everyone was laughing at me as they were walking into Rush Hour 3. I'm like, yeah, who's the sucker?
You know who sucked, too, was Maria Bello.
I know. She's a great actress, too. But, yeah. I mean, who would have thought Rachel Weisz would be that hard to replace? But, yeah.
Well, I think she was really trying hard to, like, be her character.
And Stephen Sommers. I mean, come on.
Rob Cohen has done good movies, too. But, yeah, it's a lousy film. For me, it was a guilty pleasure because for me, it was so bad it was funny. But for most people, it's just so bad. And it is. It's not a good movie at all.
Okay. I've been thinking of what all I've been watching. I started watching the Sarah Connor Chronicles, which is actually a lot better than I thought it would be. It's improved after the pilot that we saw. And then, like, two nights ago, I watched Burn After Reading. Yeah. Wasn't a fan.
Mm.
I don't know what it was about it. I just really didn't like it.
Mm. Didn't like any of the characters?
Not really.
Not even Brad Pitt's?
Brad, he was kind of funny, but he was a moron.
Yeah.
Well, most of them were. The story.
Yeah. They're all morons. Yeah.
You didn't like how serious the movie took itself? Like, it is just like, what is going on?
It I don't know. It just caught me wrong or something. And
didn't like J.K. Simmons?
Oh, he was funny. Yeah, he's like, oh, thank God everyone's dead. I was like, okay. And Sledgehammer, you know, you can't go bad with David Rash.
Yep.
But, I mean, overall, it's not that it was a bad movie. It's that it's not what I think the Coens are capable of. I don't think it was up to their standard of their better films.
I know a lot of people that are like, that's just them goofing around, but I like
them goofing around is Hudsucker Proxy, No Brother, Where Art Thou? That's how I see that. But I compare it kind of to Zack and Mary. Kevin Smith is a better filmmaker than that, I think.
Kevin Smith is a better filmmaker than the Coen brothers?
No. He's a better filmmaker than what he put out with Zack and Mary.
Gotcha.
Same thing with Burn After Reading.
Would you say Burn After Reading, would you compare it to like The Lady Killers? Or?
Oh, no, I liked it way better than The Lady Killers. Yeah. I didn't finish The Lady Killers. Okay. I got just so no.
Okay.
But yeah, no, it was kind of funny. The chair that George Clooney made was hilarious. I was just like, oh. Really? And then we started watching The Hogfather last night, which we'll finish up tomorrow, which is the British production based off of Terry Pratchett's novels. So, yeah, it's good stuff. Ethan, what about you, sir?
Okay, little note first. Before I make my year-end lists of the best and the worst films of the year, I want to see 80 films from this year.
Wow.
So I've just been, like, plowing through them, right? So I watched 8 2008 movies this week.
Okay.
Well, if you want me to just run through them?
Yeah, sure. Please. Okay. Yeah.
Hamlet 2.
Oh, I need to see that.
Wow.
The Love Guru. Hunger. American Teen. Mummy 3. Snow Angels. You Don't Mess with the Zohan. And Let the Right One In.
Wow. What did you think of American Teen?
I hated it. It sucked balls.
Just put that on the DVD.
Put that on the poster. It's so like obviously staged that it pissed me off. Like I remember listening to the Film Junk podcast when they were reviewing it. Yeah. They were discussing how it's okay because it's trying to use a documentary form to tell a more mainstream story, right? Mm. But it's just when these characters are going through these things, I should be feeling bad for them. But when I know deep down that it's staged, it just ruins it for me.
Okay. I've heard Snow Angels is great. Did you like it?
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Good.
And Love Guru was about as funny as the Holocaust.
Oh, dang. Tell us how you really feel, though. And Zohan?
You know, I think if Zohan were 30 minutes shorter, I actually would have liked it. But it's 2 hours long. Why?
Fair enough. And we will get to Let the Right One In. That's actually going to be our topic this week.
I am real quick. I got to enter into a competition on Quick Stop, and I got Strangers from Chris. So thank you, Chris.
Wow.
Appreciate it.
Nice. Yes. So, excellent. I was going to steal it. I watched like the first 10 minutes. I'm like, you know, I don't need to scare myself into being into, you know, not wanting to come into my house.
And I watched The Lady Killers this week, which was pretty bad.
Okay, so I didn't miss anything? Is that what you're saying?
No, I mean, it's not. Like, I laughed at some of it. I was laughing at mostly Tom Hanks just because of what an idiot he is. But it's really slow. It just takes so long to get going. And
it felt like two different movies to me. Like, the Tom Hanks movie, which was kind of funny, classy, quirky, Coen brothers. And the stuff with Marlon Wayans, which felt like a completely different and much raunchier and rougher movie.
Yeah. And, like, the fact that, like, everyone... Well, the ending with everyone killing each other.
Yeah.
It's like, oh my God. But I don't know. Intolerable Cruelty, is that like the worst one that they've done then?
I think
That's my vote. Yeah. I'd rather watch Lady Killers any day than Intolerable Cruelty.
Oh, wow.
Can't stand that movie.
Yeah. Steph and I went and sat in the theater because we saw Hudsucker Proxy. We saw Brother Where Art Thou. She was like, yeah, let's go see it. And yeah.
Even, you know a movie's bad when even a Bruce Campbell cameo can't redeem him in any way. Yeah, he's in Intolerable Cruelty.
That's right, I forgot about that.
But it's not, I say that not as a recommendation. I mean, it's like, seriously, nothing can save that movie. It's bankrupt.
Yeah.
Oh, and I watched The Teacher from 1973. And it's just as good as the first time I saw it.
Sweet. Well, I want to throw out really quick. I saw JCVD. This is one of the discoveries of the year. Not one of the best movies of the year because that's a little too... A little too fanboy for me to declare it as one of the best films of the year, but man, it's great. It's a real surprise, scene for scene. It's funny as heck. There are scenes of it that are so brilliantly done. Van Damme is very surprising here. I don't think it makes him a great actor like everybody says. Like I've heard people say, oh, he deserved an Oscar nomination. No, but you know what? He really lays himself out there in such a way that is so personal and so embarrassing. It takes real guts to do what he does in this movie. And he has a few scenes, particularly a monologue that people are talking about. That's really, really stunning stuff. For me, the movie was too much of a heist film. Like they really try to make it like another Dog Day Afternoon. But the fact of the matter is that it's so incredibly well done. It's made to look and feel like a grindhouse movie. The opening scene is this long shot, which is incredible. And there's a lot of really great long shots in the movie. It's so well done and so entertaining, and it's such a must for film buffs. Comes close to being like a masterpiece, not quite, but I'd still say definitely one of the movies you gotta find and see, because it really is it's one of the finds of the year. And I think the fact that the studio can't afford to give it a bigger release is one of the reasons it's kind of touch and go in theaters. But man, I think when this thing gets on DVD, I think it's really gonna pick up.
Yeah, and you thought it was like a one night only thing, right?
It was a 1 week only. It's already gone. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, gotcha. Okay, do you have anything else you wanted to add, Ethan?
No, wait, the question about JCVD, does this beat his performance in Breaking 2 Electric Boogaloo?
Well, that's a tough one, because his performance in Breaking 2 is kind of like his performance in No Retreat, No Surrender. You know, you can... you know, it's wow. It's early greatness. But yeah, I got to say, like I was telling Josh, it's kind of like after seeing Van Damme and JCVD, it's kind of like after you saw Adam Sandler for the first time in Punch Drunk Love. Or Mickey Rourke in The Wrestler. It's kind of like you want to go back and rewatch all of his older movies, because it really gives you a new perspective on him and a new respect for him. So yeah, honestly, like when I got home, I threw in Maximum Risk. I'm like, oh, I want to see vintage Van Damme before he recreated himself. It really is one of these performances where it's so interesting and it reveals a side of himself that you've never seen before. You really do want to go back and like see if there's anything you missed. So,
do you think Steven Seagal could ever do this, something like this, for his career?
Maybe. Because I'll be honest with you, out of all the movie action stars the last 20 years, I would say Van Damme was the one that had the least acting ability. From the looks of like Time Cop and Street Fight, I would say Van Damme was the one with the least amount of acting ability.
Don't forget Bloodsport.
Okay. Oh, sorry. Bloodsport. but you know what I mean? Like, I honestly, if I had to pick one guy to be in a movie like JCVD, I'd say, nah, Van Damme does not have it in him, but he really does.
Well,
yep.
Seagal can't do that now because they dub over all his movies now.
Really?
Yeah.
Like with like talking?
Yeah.
Why?
Because I don't know. He's like really fat now and changed his voice. But you know.
Gee, that's sad.
Yeah, it's kind of sad.
The things you learn listening to podcasts.
Because Seagal has moments in movies. Like he has moments in like Under Siege 2 and Under Siege 1. Where it's like you actually see semblance of an acting ability, you know, and like he could probably do something else.
Don't forget Executive Decision.
That's right. Yeah, brilliant, that movie.
Yeah. Okay, shall we move on to what hit theaters this week?
Yes. The number one movie in America currently is Jim Carrey in Yes Man, or Liar Liar 2. The Tale of Desperation. Oh, just kidding. The Tale of Despero with a CGI mouse.
I heard the book was terrible, too.
Really?
My brother said he read it. He's like, that was so gay. I was like, oh, well, I won't be seeing the movie.
Did he say it like that?
Yeah, he did.
Cool. Okay.
Thanks for the warning, Cody. A movie that did not do all that well over the weekend, and man, it... not finding much love for it. Will Smith weighs more than 7 pounds. And then in limited release and kicking butt in four screens, yes, Darren Aronofsky's The Wrestler, starring Mickey Rourke and Marissa Tomei.
Oh, over $52,000 a screen.
That's fantastic.
That's insane.
Fantastic. I'm so glad to hear that.
Yeah, it deserves it. It's well worth checking out.
Barry, have you seen 7 pounds yet?
Not yet, no, but I can't even tell you the warnings I've heard from people.
Well, I read the twist ending, and it's a howler.
Yeah, that New York Times. If I'm to believe New York Times, they apparently gave it out there too. And is he a
very special individual, Ethan?
No, I'll just say it involves a jellyfish.
Yeah, I've heard that too. I mean, yeah, bizarre.
Okay, yeah,
it's amazing how some movies they never get made, and yet something like 7 pounds gets picked up. And yeah.
Yeah, never mind. The 7 pound, maybe I'll go see
it.
Bomb.
Do you want to go see it?
Yes and no. It's kind of one of these movies I want to sneak into. I don't really want to like help support.
Well, let's do it. What are we doing tomorrow after we let's go tomorrow?
We'll talk. Let's talk. Yeah, we'll see 7 pounds.
All right. Well, you know, I'd love to say let's let's save this with DVDs, but it's not that much better, really.
Nope, nope. It was supposed to be Oscar bait, and now it's straight to DVD. Keira Knightley is the Duchess. I've heard very mixed and negative things about that, but everybody was like, oh, it's going to be up for Best Picture.
Apparently didn't they not. Say that about Atonement?
Yeah, they did. a movie, honestly, I thought it was one of the worst films of the year to make $100 million. Shia LaBeouf in Eagle Eye. Good cast, not a good movie.
Is this worth watching?
No.
Okay. I would say no. If you've seen Enemy of the State, you've seen the best parts of Eagle Eye.
Yeah, but Julianne Moore wasn't in Enemy of the State.
Julianne Moore?
Yeah. Isn't she the voice of the I'm coming for you? Isn't she the robot?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, she is.
I forgot about that.
But still, so now Shia LaBeouf is in a crappy remake of a Will Smith movie. He couldn't, you know, Hitchcock at least gives you a certain level of, you know.
But at least it was like the best Will Smith, Tony Scott movie. I mean, I gotta say, like, Enemy of the State's a great movie, but
it's even better than The Conversation, I gotta say.
But you know what, though? Eagle Eye is a lot like, it reminded me a lot of Stealth, a lot of Stealth, especially the twist, what it ends up being. It's so much like Stealth. So for me, Eagle Eye is more like a remake of Stealth than anything else.
Okay, so yeah, now I'm definitely avoiding it like the plague. All right.
A movie I think everybody wanted to be great because the cast was so promising. Ricky Gervais and Greg Kinnear in Ghost Town, which unfortunately came and went in theaters over here. And our crap title for the week.
Who knew they made a second one?
Once, twice, three times, or too many for Pulse. Pulse 3.
Oh. Yeah. I looked at it. I'm like, did they make a Pulse 2?
Wait, do you not like The Conversation?
I thought it was okay. I liked Enemy of the State better.
Really?
We had to watch that in my film class, and I just remember it being kind of boring.
Yes.
Showing it in my Coppola class in 2 years. I like The Conversation. But I got to say, Enemy of the State, more explosions.
Yeah, more explosions.
More explosions.
More explosions. You never go wrong with more explosions.
That's right.
All right. Shall we move on to news?
Yes.
Shall we I guess I'll start off with the sad news of the week.
Yeah.
And that would be that the First Lady of Star Trek, Major Barrett Roddenberry, has passed away. Which, if you're a huge sci-fi geek, you know who she is. If you watch Star Trek, you know who she is. She was Loxana Troi. She was the original first officer and the pilot of the original Star Trek series. She's the voice of the computer, including in the J.J. Abrams film. I had the pleasure to see her at StarCon up in Denver, probably 15 years ago. And she just could not be more fun. And a very sweet lady, and she will be missed. Yes.
Thank you for that.
Absolutely. Anyone want to go next? You got no news, do you?
No. Oh, Joker. Mark Hamill's being the voice of the Joker in the Batman game.
Arkham Asylum, yes. And Kevin Conroy is coming back as Batman, which didn't do much for Gotham Knight.
Are they going to get... Who else is in... Who's, like, in characters in the game?
I don't know, but those are the two big ones.
I know Croc.
Killer Croc.
Killer Croc.
You can get anyone to do his voice.
Yeah.
But the Joker and Batman, you have to have those two if you're going to get a recognized name.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's funny. People were more excited about Mark Hamill as the Joker than they ever were as Luke Skywalker. Is it just me? Or I swear, it feels like that.
You know, he came up with the definitive performance of the Joker. I just people will...
In a weird way. Yeah, he really did.
A lot of people will argue that Heath Ledger redefined it, but I think he took a lot of his inspiration from Mark Hamill, too. So, yeah, I think Mark Hamill is responsible for a lot of the way the Joker is represented today. And, you know, yeah. So I think it's a very good thing.
Yeah, definitely.
Have you got anything at all, Barry?
Well, I guess I'll just steal Ethan's. You mentioned that apparently James Cameron's going to remake Forbidden Planet?
Yeah, I don't know. Apparently, I don't know how to pronounce the name of this guy. It's something Straczynski, is that it?
Oh, J. Michael Straczynski.
He wrote for Spider-Man and Babylon
Five
or whatever. Yeah, he's planning out like a trilogy, and James Cameron is interested in doing it. And I don't know, like, isn't James Cameron already like doing a trilogy out of Avatar?
Yeah, and I remember about 10 years ago, you probably remember this, Ethan, where Cameron was going to do Planet of the Apes starring Arnold Schwarzenegger, and they courted him for years to do T3, and of course he eventually passed because they wouldn't pay him like to like create all the T3s himself.
He was actually going to do Forbidden Planet right after Titanic, too.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah,
well, so, I remember when he was going to do Spider-Man and like Schwarzenegger was going to play Doc Ock.
That's right. I even heard, Bill Paxton was going to be Spider-Man when he was going to do it? Yeah, yeah.
That's so weird. Bill Paxton is.
Can you even imagine that?
We're all going to die, man. That would have been terrible. I can shoot webs from my arms, man.
Schwarzenegger as Doc Ock would have been perfect. Oh, my tentacles or something.
But you remember, after Twister, Bill Paxton was a real action hero to go.
Never mind.
Peter Parker, right. Really?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, you're right.
So who knows what's going to happen with that?
Yeah, it could go either way.
So pending what happens with the spirit, theoretically, Frank Miller may do Buck Rogers. This is not good. Especially since they're talking about how it's going to feature his distinctive style, which means it's going to be sci-fi Sin City.
Huh.
I'm not interested.
Dave, did you read All-Star Batman and Robin?
I'm the goddamn Batman.
Exactly. So you'd agree with me that Frank Miller has pretty much gone insane.
Oh, he's gone insane for a long time.
Did he write that?
Yes.
Oh, that's a Miller original right there?
Yes. That's what he put. I read the first issue. I'm like, what?
Jeez. And he can't write a female character without making her a prostitute?
Yeah, no kidding.
You know, it's been pretty much since the Dark Knight Returns. That was probably the last really good thing that Miller did, as far as I'm concerned. So, yeah, I think a lot of it is him working on what he used to be. I don't know how to put that. I don't know how Sin City 2 is going to be.
Is that still happening?
I don't
with
know.
With Rodriguez directing?
I've been hearing that for a while. Yeah.
Theoretically, it's still going, but I don't know.
Hmm.
I just think this is a big, big mistake.
Yeah, I agree with you, David. I mean, you know, well, the proof is in the pudding, but it just doesn't sound like a good mix, you know?
Well, you look at what The Spirit was originally, and you look at what this movie is, I'm like, this isn't The Spirit.
I don't know if Will Eisner would approve.
I kind of doubt it, because it was a lot more, you know, 60s Batman style than anything else.
I remember when Bob Kane saw Tim Burton's Batman. He's like, you know, this is, you know, people may love this or hate this movie, but this is exactly what I had in mind in terms of feel. Like yourself, I can't imagine Frank Miller doing that. It just doesn't, you know, who knows? Maybe he'll find the right feel, the right tone, but yeah, certainly nothing
without
he's
Gil
done.
Gerard, it's not Buck Rogers. Okay,
I would go so far to agree with you, yeah.
Because he's had such a unique take on it.
Absolutely.
And you can go to our interview with him and Aaron Grayson a couple years ago.
That's good stuff. That's a good listen.
Maybe I'll find that and post it. We put it up over at a Geek Label. So I think I might grab that and put it up in conjunction with
this.
Because
he
had a
listen.
Very interesting take on the whole Buck Rogers thing. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Anyone else?
I
think it's you and me, Ethan.
Okay. Judge Dredd reboot. It's on the way.
Thank goodness. I'm ready for a reboot. Not another Sylvester Stallone.
Well, is Rob Schneider going to be in this one, too?
One can only hope.
This is my argument, though, that some comic books just can't be adapted. I can't see anybody wearing that silly hat and having that dialogue and actually making it credible. I just can't. I thought RoboCop
Jason
was...
Jason Statham will do it.
Jason Statham? Yeah.
Well, there's talk about possibly doing Judge Death and...
Hmm.
If you went that route, you could make it pretty darn good.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'll have to see it. But yeah, I just can't even picture that working. Just because the movie
that's out there. What were you going to say about RoboCop, though?
Well, RoboCop, you know, it's a similar idea in the sense that it's a guy who's helmeted almost the entire movie and has such a presence, even though it's a big, big suit doing most of the presence there. But you know, of course, that film is so well directed and written.
Well, and to be fair, I'd venture to say that Peter Weller had better acting chops than Sylvester Stallone.
Certainly for that.
Yeah.
Stallone can act, but yeah, definitely not. Judge Dredd is one of his worst films. That's not.
Well, are they going to finally reboot Stop Her, My Mom Will Shoot?
There is a potential franchise there. I can see that. I can see that going.
Well, Estelle Getty's gone though, so
it's true.
Yeah.
Get Judy Dench.
Jason Statham and Judy Dench. I would see that.
Oh, my brain just broke.
What a great comedy matchup that would be.
Oh, man. That's awesome. Okay. Well, speaking of comedy, or lack thereof, apparently Stephen Chow has stepped down as director of Green Hornet. And I couldn't be happier, as much as I love Stephen Chow.
Really?
He wanted to make it a comedy. And I think probably what happened is that Seth Rogen and the powers that be finally just had to say, look, we have to do this straight-faced. And Chow was like, you know, I'm still interested because he's still Kato, but he's stepping down as director, which I think is actually probably the best thing that could have happened.
Interesting.
So Seth Green, or Seth Rogen doesn't want to make a comedy?
No. He wants to make it a legit superhero movie.
I'm glad.
Well, maybe he wanted it. Maybe it to be more of a goofy superhero movie. And he was like, no, we can still have comedy, but more in our style. And I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, there's a way to make a superhero movie funny, but I love Stephen Chow's over the top slapstick humor. It just wouldn't fit in this context, I don't think.
Yeah.
Well, he's still playing Kato, isn't he?
Yes, he is. Yeah, he's still playing Kato. Yeah, so I don't know.
Cool. Well, I'm excited about the direction they're going in. I mean, The Shadow is one of my favorite comic book movies, so I'm excited that it's going to be another feel of, you know, Art Deco.
With Alec Baldwin?
Yeah.
The Shadow.
I like The Shadow. Yeah.
Well, is, like, Seth Rogen going to do the Batman voice and stuff? And...
you mean the Rorschach voice now?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Okay. All these superheroes need lozenges.
They released somebody said it was, I think, first showing said it was 8 minutes, but it was only 4 minutes. Of the Comic-Con Watchmen footage on iTunes.
Yeah, I saw that.
Did you guys watch it? It's on my laptop.
Is it any good?
No.
No.
Really?
it's the same. There's no dialogue
it was,
in it.
It was before the... It was, like, released in July, so it's, like...
It's before the trailer came out.
Yeah.
It's before they decide to let people know that there's talking in the movie.
This is a good thing.
Well, I mean, it's got a couple of shots that aren't in the trailer, but it's not... It's just underwhelming, and I hate that song that's in the trailer. It's so cheesy.
Oh, that cheesy one in the second trailer? Gosh, that first trailer is still one of my favorites of the year.
Okay. Well, let's go from one to another one. Apparently, Keanu Reeves is still psyched to be doing Cowboy Bebop. I'm pulling this from Screen Rant. You know, he's talking about how they have the rights. Apparently, they're going to start with the first couple episodes, which is not a bad thing. And it doesn't talk about him playing Spike, but I think he is, and I just don't see that working. I don't know if any of you guys have ever watched the show.
I've seen one episode.
What did you think of it?
It was pretty cool, but I think it was like in the middle of the series, so I had no idea what the hell was going on. So
Fair enough. It's goofy and it's fun, but the character's funny and articulate and a smartass and, you know, things that you don't generally associate with Keanu Reeves. So, yeah, we'll see how that goes.
Strange.
Have you guys seen any of the Dragon Ball Z footage?
Oh, I saw that trailer.
Oh, it's so bad.
I love Emmy Rossum, but, yeah, this looks like a career killer.
Dude, and Spike is what's the guy's name? Piccolo?
Yeah, Piccolo and who's the alien guy, the green? I don't know.
Yeah, it's Piccolo. Piccolo's Piccolo? The alien guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're in different generations here. I just look at it and laugh. I remember I was in the Philippines when the first movie came out, and I was like, who would make a movie called Dragon Balls?
It sounds like a Rob Schneider sword and sorcery romp.
Exactly. Yes.
Rob Schneider is Goku.
Yeah.
Wow.
Rated PG-13.
Have you got anything before we get to our exclusives, Ethan?
Oh, yeah. This is a Screen Geeks exclusive.
Oh, no. Before we get to it.
Oh, sorry. Tim Robbins is going to be in Iron Man 2 playing Howard Stark. So, it should be cool.
Yeah. And I'm okay with that.
Yeah, nothing against that.
Cool.
You said, Barry, that Howard the Duck's coming on DVD.
Thank you. I was going to mention that. Yeah, this is amazing. DVD Active, one of the best DVD sites on the web, released this on March 20th. 2009, we're going to get Howard the Duck Special Edition on DVD. I don't know if it's two discs. What's that?
Blu-ray?
I didn't say. It just said done DVD, so I don't know if...
So I got to see those high-def duck boots.
But it has like all sorts of special features, like the making of the movie, the special effects, the music of Howard the Duck, the legacy of Howard the Duck, like all these extras.
Anything so extra? Like, we're so ashamed.
Anything extra with Leia Thompson?
I don't know.
Here's the important question. Is there a George Lucas commentary?
Probably not. And I would not be surprised if he's like not even present in the extras. But they're still announcing the extras. They still get them together. But there's all these extras planned and listed. So this is looking like one of the most exciting discs of the year. Because like some of the best like B movies have come out on DVD. Nothing. Like one of my favorites, Night of the Comet, didn't even have a trailer on it. But this is like, you know, this is people have been waiting for decades for this to come out.
Yeah.
And finally, it's coming out.
And people know about it now too, but they just haven't seen it.
Right. So.
Before you had to like import it from Brazil or something, if you wanted it on DVD.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, exciting.
Before we get to our exclusives, apparently, I don't know if anyone here is a Doctor Who fan much.
Yeah.
But David Tennant is leaving the show in 2010, as we've talked about before. Mm. And apparently they're toying with the idea of a female Doctor.
Wow.
Which is kind of cool, considering it's a show that's, what, like 40 or 50 years old?
It's about time they decided to do this. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. So that could be kind of cool.
Interesting.
And yippee. And should I put the disclaimer on these, Ethan?
Why not?
Okay. So with the quote-unquote cinematic, the journalistic integrity recently shown by E! In other places, essentially saying, hey, we can make up rumors and have them pass them off as true, you know, like Eddie Murphy being the Riddler or Shia LaBeouf being Robin. We said, you know what, why don't we just pull some rumors out of our butt and just pass them off as real news? So, Ethan, yours is far better, so I'm going to let you start off.
Oh, should I actually read it out loud?
Or you can just summarize it. Tell us what your scoop was.
Well, it looks like, you know, the executives, they racked their brain. How can we make a sequel? They decide, you know what, can't do it. So they decide, hey, Harvey Dent, he's a good character. Said, hey, let's make a prequel. And they looked at hot actors, and they came across Justin Timberlake, and they watched The Love Guru, and they saw that subtlety in his performance. That tact, and they thought, this guy is perfect. So we're seeing a Harvey Dent prequel, and he's going to be doing the soundtrack too.
So he's following in the footsteps of Will Smith.
Yeah, he's working on a new hit single, Put a Dent in Yo Sex Life.
You know, I'm just so proud of you, sir. This is so well thought out.
Very nice work, Ethan.
It puts mine to shame, but I'll still put mine out there, too. So I was walking down the street, and some bum gave me this little tidbit of news that apparently, you know, we have conflicting information here, apparently. Christopher Nolan's taking too long, so Warner Brothers said, forget it, we'll just make our own movie. And they're really looking to cut costs, to make, you know, best bang for the buck. Kind of like, you know, with Tokyo Drift, Fast and the Furious. You know, cut the special effects budget. Let's just make, we're going to make our money no matter what. So they've approached Jason Segel to do a puppet version of Batman. And they're actually going to be adapting the popular Elseworlds series of Batman versus Dracula. And somehow they've pushed, they not only talked Segel into pushing back the Muppet movie, they've also secured the rights to the Count so that they don't actually have to pay a big name to do Dracula. And I don't know, depending on how good this is, I don't know, we may see a Miss Piggy Wonder Woman movie next. We'll just kind of see what happens from there.
I'd pay to see that.
Put a dent in your sex life.
It's like playing in my head right now.
With all the falsetto voices, too. Like, put a dent in your sex life.
Flip a coin now.
Dave, produced by Tim Milland.
Wow, and when the sun comes on, I never mind.
Yeah, okay. Dave, the difference is yours sounds like a movie I'd actually see, so.
You wouldn't see Justin Timberlake as Harvey Dent?
Well, I'd buy the soundtrack.
And I would want the video to be just like Prince's Bat Dance video, where he's got like half a face in the video, and he's like dancing with all these like women in bat outfits.
But would Andy Samberg be in the video?
Oh, absolutely.
Sorry.
You'd be the Riddler.
Okay, wow. Okay, well, let's go ahead and take a quick break, and we will be right back.
This is Ray.
So, let's listen in as Ray hits on Sandra.
Excuse me, miss, but do you know karate? Because your body is kicking.
Now, let's listen to the same scene. Only this time, Ray is sporting a quality Geek Label t-shirt.
Yo, baby, I was wondering,
damn. Rejection.
What's up with that?
We can't really stop it.
Damn.
But we can outfit you in buttery smooth designs for geeks, gamers, and tech heads. They're custom t-shirts. They're not magic t-shirts.
Damn.
Another fine product from geeklabel.com.
This week we're going to look at one of the most talked about little scene films of the year. It didn't really get the wide release I think everybody hoped it would, but boy, does it deserve to be talked about. We're going to be talking about the vampire film, Let the Right One In. Anybody who sees this film kind of feels like they're discovering it, the same way people felt about Donnie Darko, about Fight Club, except, I think you could say maybe Let the Right One In is certainly on the same level, or maybe even better. Let's talk about this. All four of us have seen this movie. Let's go long distance first. What did you think, Ethan?
Yeah, I love this movie, and what I think it does so well is that it's subtlety and its patience. Like, I'm really glad I went into this knowing it was going to be very slow paced, because I would have expected, whoa, crazy vampires and stuff like that, right? But it's very much a relationship film.
Yeah.
And it takes its time and establishes its characters. And it has so much impact because of that, I think.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
This is a film that Marty has been telling me to see for well over a month now, and he's taken his friends to see it. And it's just one of these films that people see it, they're very changed by it, they're very moved by it. When Josh and I ventured down to Denver and we took your poor mother.
Yeah.
But you know what? Like, we didn't know what the heck to expect. I mean, one of the funniest things is that before the movie started, Josh and I were just kind of sitting there. Then the opening credits start, you know, and they're deadly quiet. And then you see the snow fall over the black screen. And Josh leans over and says, if something jumps out at me right now, I'm going to crap myself.
Because it was so intense. Like, I don't know what to expect. And it was, like, very quiet. And I was like, dear God, something's just going to, like, jump out at me. But it wasn't that way at all. It wasn't aggressive at all.
No, in fact, I tell you, it reminded me of Rosemary's Baby. I mean, it just, you know, about these different apartment dwellers and just kind of really, really let the story build. And instead of being a movie with all this exposition, like, well, the vampires need to feast every 4 years before they, you know, it's you kind of discover these characters by observation, which is a different thing for a horror film. And I was tremendously moved by the relationship between Oscar and the little girl.
Yeah, it's almost, I guess technically it's a horror film, but it's not even necessarily a horror film, I don't think.
Yeah. Definitely not in the boob scare, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah. Although I love that it takes, like, all these vampire cliches and completely turns it on its head. Like, the way the girl's eyes glow in the dark, which is so subtle, you might not even see that. Or when she's climbing the side of the building. Like, these scenes that just make you go, wow, but they come out of nowhere. And they're done in a way that are so subtle that they don't really try to call attention to themselves.
Yeah. Yeah, one of our listeners, Robert Taylor, he called it Bergman-esque.
Yeah, I would
and
say
very
yeah,
much so.
That's exactly how I just described it to one of my colleagues. I said it's kind of like if Bergman directed a script by Anne Rice. That's how it feels. I mean, it's beautiful. It's a beautiful film.
It is. I it's kind of hard to even talk. I'm still kind of in shell shock, even though it's been over a week since I've seen it. It's just absolutely amazing. The characters are compelling. I'm just floored by how good this movie was.
Did anybody think it was too long?
No.
Did you?
No, but I honestly love a movie that takes time to develop its characters. I really did. And it was one of these films I called Josh like the day after we saw it. I'm like, oh, I've completely been thinking about the old man and the little girl and their relationship. It's just one of these films that it just kind of haunts you and stays with you. And there's so many ways. It's not like a film like a Kubrick movie where, you know, like every scene has a different meaning. But it is one of these films where you kind of think about exactly what every scene means and why it has that level of importance.
And it's also a coming-of-age film.
Yes.
You know, when he asks her if she'll be his girlfriend and that really, 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 really awkward scene when she's getting changed.
Yeah.
I was just like, did I just see what I think I saw? I actually called Josh later because you guys saw it before. I'm like, did I see that? And yes.
Yeah. I love that scene in question, of which I'll only hint at for those who haven't seen the movie. I love it that she tells him that he's a vampire, and he really takes it in stride because he's just so thrilled to have a girlfriend.
Yeah.
The fact that, you know, but it's funny, like that moment where he sees her naked for a flash, that shocks him more than the fact that she's this undead vampire.
Absolutely.
Like, yes. what a typical 12-year-old.
Yeah.
And like, I think everything in the inn is what really makes the movie. Like, all the stuff, like, when that guy goes in the apartment and she's in the bathtub sleeping and there's the confrontation between them. And then, like, she just comes out and hugs him. And, like,
it's beautiful. Stuff, yeah, it's just so heartbreaking.
Like, I like,
so
awesome. I like especially that scene, the way they use music to blare out the dialogue at a certain scene after that. That's really a nice touch, I think. And I think the violence in this film is very interesting, too.
Yeah, the really only really, really gory parts really is at the pool at the end.
Yeah, I have to say that, and well, the scene earlier where kind of Oscar, he kind of fights back.
Yes.
I have to say those are, well, the scene where Oscar fights back and the pool scene, those are definite, like, crowd pleaser moments, but when he thinks they're kind of disturbing.
They are, although I cheered when he hit that kid with the pole. I was like, that's awesome. Because they've treated him like such crap and seeing this kid, you know, again, part of the whole coming of age thing, learning to stand up for yourself. And
well, there's so many things that are left in question, like the relationship that the guy has with her at the beginning and then like the relationship between Oscar and his dad
and Oscar and his mother.
So it's just like there's so much stuff to like reflect on and think about.
Yeah, and the violence is, I mean, it's a violent movie, but it's done in a way that it suggests more than it shows, for the most part.
Yeah, it's subdued violence, which is kind of interesting.
Well, like in the early scene, I mean, the scene where, I'm not going to spoil it, but the old guy is basically getting victims for the little girl. I mean, the way that's done, it basically literally have him blocking the violence. He's standing in front of, so you really don't get a clear look at what he's doing, although you know what he's doing. And I thought that was such a nice touch, because as opposed to most movies, which would be like, okay, close-up to the gore, close-up for the Fangoria fans, it's all about character. And the movie really has a feeling about violence. I mean, you know, like when the boy lashes out against the bullies at school, it's, you know, it is a crowd-pleasing moment. But at the same time, you really are reacting to the effect that violence has on people, and certainly the way, you know, this, you know, it's kind of a violent society. Certainly the bully in this movie is such an evil individual. But the boy is dealing with violence because all of a sudden he has a girlfriend who's capable of it.
Absolutely. I don't want to go too much into spoiler territory.
Well, there's one scene I kind of have to say kind of sucked, though. That it's still a great movie, but that one scene containing a bunch of CGI cats was a bit.
Yeah, when the cats all attacked the lady.
That was kind of weak.
It was kind of funny.
I liked it because it was kind of like the rest of the movie. There was such an element of surprise. For the most part, I'm wondering, why are we focusing so much on these secondary characters who are colorful, but I didn't think particularly interesting? And I thought it was really, really, really clever the way they were intertwined in the story. And the cat scene is over the top, but I enjoyed it because it took me so. I mean, we were laughing not only at it because it was, you know, darkly funny, but because of, like, oh my god, like that, it comes out of nowhere. I love the scene where that character wakes up for the first time. Yeah. The sunlight is touching her.
Yes,
and for that matter, her the way. Yep.
And I was just going to say, the follow-up scene to that, obviously, is stunning.
Yeah, the way she exits the film is absolutely...
Exactly, yeah.
It's amazing, because there's this realization, even though there's no actual discussion about what's happened, she knows what's happened, she knows what's going to happen, and she still goes forward with it, which I think was really cool. You don't always have to spell everything out for an audience.
Yeah, the movie felt emotionally honest, which you can't say about a lot of vampire movies. You can't say that about a lot of movies in general.
I still think it's amazing how, like, even though at the beginning of the film when the guy is getting the victims for her, like, I was kind of rooting for him. Like,
yeah.
And the whole scene where he's in, like, the school and he's, like, hiding from those people, like, you didn't even really know anything about him, but you were still, like, afraid for him, which is so weird.
Yeah.
Very absolutely. Much so. And he looked like Two-Face later in the movie, too.
That was actually better effects, I thought, than the Two-Face.
Oh, yeah. I agree.
Absolutely.
Well, one thing we have to discuss, though, obviously, is the remake that's going to come out.
Yeah, with the guy that did Cloverfield, right?
Yeah, they're going to
get... No!
It's Matt Reeves doing it.
And because of how subtle Cloverfield was?
Yeah.
What else do you know about Ethan? You know, it's Matt Reeves, and what else do you know about the remake?
Well, I was just joking that Jaden Smith was going to be the kid in it, but...
Well, I read something about he's going to set it in an urban-type environment or something. I think I read.
That's what we were joking about.
We were joking about it.
I'll bet anything, like, the little girl is going to be played by Dakota Fanning, and it's going to be Jaden Smith as the boy. Like, I can totally see that.
Well, no!
Seriously, that's the kind of crap they do.
There's so much, like, subtlety in the movie. There's so much dramatic subtlety. But they're going to, like, have these scenes where, like, they first meet, and there's going to be the big swelling music to say, oh, this is emotional and stuff like that.
Well, and again, we talk about the victim who ends up doing what she does. It's going to be handled completely differently. There is going to be no subtlety in this film.
The hospital is
going to
be even going to explode.
Yes.
Even more CGI cats.
Well, and it's going to blow up like the Joker blew up the hospital in Dark Knight. That's what it'll look like.
They just use stock footage from the Dark Knight. The whole movie's just stock footage from the Dark Knight.
Like Silent Night, Deadly Night 2.
Right, yeah.
Oh,
well, considering how much money the Dark Knight made, I'm sure right now some Hollywood executive is listening just like, ooh, this is going to be a
crackdown. I take the same stance I did on the Old Boy remake. Just let some crappy filmmaker do it because it's going to get made. Don't put someone with talent's name behind this because it's not going to do justice to the original.
Yeah.
Wait, sorry to bring back that Dark Knight stock footage thing. Is this going to be like that porno they released afterwards? They combined a porno and Rocky and stuff? They took a porno that Sylvester Stallone did. And they took scenes from Rocky and they tried to, like, recut it together as, like, a movie. And...
Oh. Well, I'm happy to say I missed that one.
No, I've never heard of that.
Man. Yeah, I know that Stallone did it. I didn't know they did a splice of the two. Wow. I'm sure Stallone is just overjoyed about that.
It's like the Phantom Edit, but not quite.
That's right. Oh, gosh.
Oh,
well, why is there anything good that could come out of this?
No.
Okay.
Well, let's be hypothetical. Let's take a different change of this. Let's try this for a second. Can we think of one director we trust with this?
Fincher?
Yeah. Okay.
Josh,
Ethan? Yeah, you guys, go ahead.
Oh, I'm trying to think. Catherine Hardwick, obviously.
Frank Miller, I'm sorry. Frank Miller.
Diablo Cody.
Is that a serious one? Or?
No, I'm just kidding.
Okay, I'll do a serious one. Tim Burton, you think?
No, I think it'd be too much about art direction.
I think Fincher, I don't see him stepping within a million miles of this, but I mean, you look at how subdued Zodiac was and how he can handle, in his other films, handle emotional stuff and, you know, subtext. But other than that,
what about Aronofsky?
I was going to say Aronofsky because, you know, most of us trust him with RoboCop. Yeah. Would you trust him with...
You know, I could actually see that fitting his style pretty well.
Yeah.
If he was given the freedom to make it. But again, do you see Aronofsky wanting to do a remake?
No.
He's paying a lot of money.
I'm sure.
I think he is respectful enough not to do that, though, even if it was for money. I don't think.
Well, he needs the money for his Noah's Ark epic, so.
That's right.
Yeah, but if he's doing that, if it was all about money, he'd be putting, pedal to the metal on this RoboCop remake, and he's kind of dragging his feet right now. So
the only remake to a Swedish film that came out that I thought was decent, and it was a good film, was the remake to Insomnia, because Insomnia was a Swedish film. But at the same time, I didn't think it was better than the original, despite the fact that the cast was so fantastic and Christopher Nolan directed it very well. I still thought there was no need to do it.
And I was going to ask you, we talk about the relationship to Bergman. Do you think it's more because of that or because of the culture of Sweden? I mean, it's kind of a funny thing to try to say, but...
Yeah.
No, I think that's very much the case because we haven't seen any of that before because we don't live over there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm guessing the cultural differences probably lend themselves to the kind of feel that this movie made. And an American remake. Oh.
Yeah, because you're exactly right. This is Stockholm, Sweden. This is a very specific feel, very specific neighborhood, very specific type of people. You know, just like in Denver, you know, anywhere, there's like, you know, certain areas, certain people reflect a certain kind of feel.
But this definitely shares some emotional things with like Fanny and Alexander.
Mm-hmm.
Very much so.
The Virgin Spring, yeah.
Yeah,
you got it.
So it's... freaking Americans, sorry.
Dang, Yankees. Yes.
Yeah, ugh. Okay, so I have one spoiler question. Hang on here. I'm gonna time this. We're going to block it out for 30 seconds for discussion, starting now. Do you think Oscar was the replacement for The Old Man?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely.
Just because it's a very cyclical film that case.
Yeah, as much as we love her, and I think we're going to grow to love her just like Oscar does, I think she's certainly using him.
But she needs it. I mean, I don't think it's a matter of just using him. I think she needs, she needs that.
They need each other. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
No, go ahead.
This is actually more in the book, so I guess it's not spoiler stuff. Okay. But I told Barry, I was watching an interview with the director, and he said that in the book that the movie's based on, there's actually, they go into the relationship that the girl has with that guy, and it's very much a pedophile.
Yeah, he was a pedophile.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Thing, but they kept it out of the movie. But I think it's still kind of like undertoned in that, because when she's talking to him for the first time, it's not her voice.
Yeah,
right. It's the old woman that she ultimately is inside. Yeah, and I like that. You know, you could really interpret that however you want. I mean, you could see the movie kind of leaves it open to you. So I choose not to think that.
Yeah, I think he was kind of jealous when she was hanging out with him.
Yes, absolutely.
He knew.
And their final scene together is very tender. It's not what you'd expect for someone like a Renfield caretaker type.
Yeah, yeah. Renfield. Igor. You know,
right.
Master. Yeah. So yes, see this freaking movie.
So is it going to be on all of our top tens this year?
Yeah,
then?
Some
of
mine.
Oh,
it's on
definitely,
mine. It's
definitely.
In my top five at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do we know when it's coming to DVD? Do we get that?
I think it's March.
Man.
It's coming out.
I
want to say March 3rd.
I will buy see it right
of,
now.
Day of. I will.
Well, thank you, Marty, for telling me to see this because he literally is like, I don't care what you have to do. Drive all the way to Denver, see it. I'm like, I'm not driving all the way to Denver, see a vampire movie just because you said so. But thank you, Marty. You were right.
I tell people, yeah, watch this great Swedish vampire movie. And people just glazed eyes.
I know.
What?
It doesn't. In the poster, honestly, I don't like the poster of this movie at all. It looks like it's too gory, or the one where they show the girl looks too gory, or the one where it's just the shadow, it looks boring. Like, what is this movie? And the trailer gives too much away. And the trailer makes it look far more intense and dark than it really is. You know, in all fairness, I don't know how you would promote this movie, but I don't like the way they've done it. I really don't.
I know. I first heard about it in Slash Film, but I kind of ignored it. Just like,
I'd heard it from a lot of places. This is kind of. Oh, go ahead, Ethan.
The first person I saw to really rave about it was actually Alex Billington.
Yeah, he was on it pretty much right about the same time Peter was over at Slash Film. And, you know, a lot of the same buzz went around about Children of Men, which I vehemently disagreed with. But this is one where everyone I've heard has liked this movie.
The wife of one of the best film critics in Denver, Robert Dennerstein, his wife.
I met him up at the film
festival. Yes, you did. Okay. That's right. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Cool. She was the one who says, you know, Barry, you really got to see Let the Right One In. It's the best movie I've seen all year. I'm like, wow. So,
yeah.
Well, I think my mom actually didn't like it at first because she thought it was boring. But then, like, when you and I were discussing it in the car on the way back, she was like, oh, I really like it now.
It does kind of. It's a movie that stays with you. It does.
Yeah, most definitely. Yes, check this movie out. If it comes out near you, go see it.
What were you going to say, Ethan?
What was I going to say?
Yeah,
nothing. I'm just kind of just laughing when Josh said his thing. So.
Fair enough. Fair enough. All right. Cool. Yes. See, Let the Right One In. It's amazing. Well worth checking out. And let's talk about what's hitting theaters.
Wait, one thing. This is pissing me off that like Twilight is at the same time as this. Just like looking at the quality of vampire movie, like on that level.
There's no discussion here.
No, I know, but it's just like, what the hell is going on?
Anyway. We're talking about In the Name of the King compared to Lord of the Rings, okay?
Well, the scary thing, though, is that the remake will be more influenced by Twilight than the original. That's kind of a scary thought.
See, I didn't That's think I could be point. Any more depressed, but thank you, Ethan.
Social sparkle. And
I'm tightening my noose.
Yeah,
they probably have a scene where they fly somewhere together. Oh yeah, no, you're so right, Ethan. That's an excellent point. And I think people will blame it. I'm sure people are like, well, of course we didn't discover it because Twilight got all the publicity. But the thing is, I think the Twilight people, they had the budget to promote this movie. Well, whereas, but the right one, and really, I think they're doing the best they can with what they have, and people are finding it. But let's face it, not enough people are finding.
Let's also face it: the Twilight crowd probably not going to be the same as the Let the Right One In crowd.
Yeah.
You know, which is too bad like because good it's, movies, as opposed well, to.
But all the Twilight fans are like, Twilight's about romance and blah, 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 blah. This film has more of that in it than Twilight's titles.
My heart broke for this movie, not for Twilight. Yeah. My heart broke for the money I spent on Twilight, not for those characters. So.
Okay, let's talk about what's hitting theaters. There's better stuff coming out.
It's an interesting week. A little of everything. Little crap, little Christmas treats, little coal. Adam Sandler in Bedtime Stories.
Is that the Cole?
maybe. I don't know.
You know what? The British guy from Sarah Marshall's in it, so.
Yeah, and who's.
That's the only thing that I'm.
Kerry Russell. That's a good one. Yeah, Kerry Russell's in it, too. Yeah,
so where's she been?
Mission Impossible 3 and Waitress. Waitress.
Oh, yeah.
Good movie.
I forgot about Waitress.
And August Rush.
Oh, and August Rush.
How could we forget August Rush?
When you've been trying so hard. To forget it.
So hard. All right, let's go through the crap. Marley and Me, I'm sorry, but...
I heard about this, what this story's about, and it would make me want to hurt somebody after watching this movie.
Seriously, if you're wanting to look for a feel-good family movie, don't see this movie. This is not going to make you feel good.
They're promoting it like a Beethoven 6.
Yeah, I know, and it's really more like Old Yeller 2.
But it makes Old Yeller look like a happy movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So just like everyone... No one, they don't all go get ice cream at the end then? Or?
No. At the funeral. And then, let's see, let's go through the crap. Frank Miller's The Spirit, which everybody I know who has seen it says that visually it's fantastic, but as a movie, no good.
I haven't heard a single positive thing.
Variety was very much on that line. It said it's a great looking movie, but the performances are a snoozer and the movie gets old after 15 minutes.
Well, you asked a bunch of your movie critics, fellow guys up in Denver, and what did they do?
They made this gagging sound. That's all
wait,
I'm going to say.
Wait, whoa. But come on, toilets are always funny.
Ow.
Who's the guy that's playing the spirit?
Gabriel Macht. I don't know who he is.
Who is he?
No idea.
No one knows, okay.
No.
And it better be red.
This is the only thing I remember from the trailer.
I freaking love Scarlett Johansson, but this is another... It's like she window dressing. She's not really... being asked to act. No. And what is the deal with they're like trying to make it look like there's all this nudity and sexiness and it's a PG-13 movie? You know Eva Mendez doesn't have a shred of nudity in this movie. If she did, of course, it would open big. But, of course, it's, you know, it's, yeah, it's like the PG Sin City.
Yeah, I mean, because look at all Jamie King's in it, Scarlett Johansson.
Yeah, like, it's like all these hotties. And,
yeah.
Yeah, and Maxim Magazine has more nudity than this movie.
That it does.
So, not that that's a bad thing. But anyway, all right, good stuff.
You know, Sarah Marshall has more nudity.
Boy, does it ever.
Sorry.
All right, I'll save the best two for last. The opening limited release, this film played very well. It's supposed to be really, really cool. Played at the Denver Film Festival. Waltz with Bashir. This is the animated film. Looks really cool. I've heard really good things about this one. Two films I can't talk about, but thumbs up for both of them. The Curious Case of Benjamin Button, starring Brad Pitt and Cate Blanchett. And Valkyrie, starring Tom Cruise, Bill Nighy. Remember, it's not just Tom Cruise. Bill Nighy, Eddie Izzard, Kenneth Branagh, Terrence Stamp. Great cast. So even if you hate Tom Cruise, it's not his movie. It's an ensemble piece.
Okay.
And it doesn't suck even though it's all American actors. Because that's the thing, is like the trailer just makes us like, why didn't they do it with German with subtitles?
Because American audiences wouldn't want to see that.
Well, I know. But
and you know what? It's something of a twist to actually hear Hitler in English, because that's the way the Germans. It's like us hearing each other, and you know it's
kind of like when they did the translation in Hunt for October.
Yes, exactly. So this way we're hearing them as they hear each other, as opposed to, you know, us listening to Tom Cruise with a German accent, which, let's face it, would get old and silly after like 10 minutes.
Kevin Costner trying to do a British accent.
Right, or Richard Gere doing an Irish accent in The Jackal. Yeah, I mean, just, yeah. Some actors are great actors, but some actors just don't have accents in them. De Niro has, with a few exceptions, De Niro has always been really, really lousy with the accents.
Like Maria Bello in Mummy 3?
Like Maria Bello in Mummy 3, absolutely.
All right, well, I don't want to get you in trouble, but not next week, but the week after, I'm going to be seeing Benjamin Button, and I have to see Slumdog Millionaire because it's opening out here again. So I saw it for free, and I will pay to see it again. Let's talk about what's hitting DVD, because if you thought this week's DVDs were bad.
All right, we get The Little Scene, American Carol. In fact, you might as well say it's like the world premiere of the movie, because hardly anybody saw it in theaters.
Sean
Hannity did.
Oh, and hey, you know what? It made more money than, what was that other animated film that just came out? Oh, it made like
Delgo?
Delgo, yeah. It made the equivalent of like two people a screen.
Oh, man.
It was played here, though.
It did?
Yeah, and yeah, I got a bunch of cadets in the theater like, oh. So I didn't see it.
For what?
For American Carol.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm good. Okay. And that's it, right?
Oh, no, there's a couple more. Film of all the movies to celebrate the 20th anniversary, you know, Die Hard, Roger Rabbit, the 20th anniversary special edition of Hellbound, Hellraiser 2.
Yeah.
Josh, any thoughts on this?
It's really gory. I don't know if I can stomach it again.
Did you say is it the most disgusting movie you've ever seen?
I think it is.
More than any of the Saw movies? Or Hostel 2, really?
Yes.
Wow.
And you know what I think is what's so gory about it is the special effects aren't – some of them are good and some of them aren't. I think it's that, like, disgusting special effects because they're kind of bad, too. Hmm. That's why it's so bad. I don't know.
It's kind of like the first Evil Dead where it's like they clearly use, like, egg yolk and crap.
No, it just looks – it's just gross.
It's not as bad as – if it ever comes out over here, Tokyo Gore Police. I've heard that thing is just
– Tokyo Gore Police. That's a great title.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that – yeah, do a little search on that for some of the screenshots, and you're going to be like – what in the yeah?
We need to do a show like in the best titles. I swear that's got to be in the top 10. Tokyo Gore Police.
Oh yeah, yeah. Showed at Fantastic Fest, I think. And yeah. Oh gosh. Yeah, I'll show you some stuff sometime.
Nice. Well, maybe not. And then last title of the week. This doesn't sound that bad. In fact, this sounds better than the other two. Bob Saget, the Comedy Central roast.
Oh gosh. Has anyone else seen this?
No, but I know Bob Saget is not.
I've heard some of his comedy. Man, it's not America's Funniest Home Videos worthy.
Clean.
Oh, there's so many jokes about Danny Tanner being gay and John Stamos being gay. And oh, yeah. Cloris Leachman has one of the funniest bits it was just her and the donkey. And that's really the nicest thing that I can say. I can tell you the part that really got me after we go off the air because I don't want to get the explicit rating.
I got to say quickly about Cloris Leachman. It's funny how she's made such a huge comeback because, you know, everybody knows her from Dancing with the Stars. But she was in Beer Fest. She was in Bad Santa. I mean, it's like
she's in Glorious Bastards.
What's that?
She's gonna be an Inglorious Bastard.
Oh, nice. Right.
Yeah, it's like it's amazing. She's like what, 85 now, and she's like hotter than she ever was before. It's
she was she in movie 3, 4?
Was she the mom with the hot dogs?
Like, yeah, right. Yeah. She was the one who was stroking the hot dogs in Beer Fest, right?
Okay then.
No joke is too low for Cloris Leachman.
Apparently not. Okay, well, let's wrap this bad boy up. If you want to shoot us an email, by all means do.
Huh? It's Christmas. Is this coming out on Christmas?
What?
Merry Christmas?
Merry Christmas, yes. Sorry. We're going to say everyone. That. Yeah, I guess it is time to say Merry Christmas. And
I don't know. I just
yes,
have a crazy Kwanzaa.
Oh, yes. No, we're non-traditional holiday. What's that called? We're non-denominational.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Festivus.
Oh, for the rest of us?
Yeah. I don't know. Whatever you celebrate, have a good one.
Merry Christmas from me.
Yes. So,
if you want to shoot for my Jewish friends.
Yeah. If you want to shoot us an email, do podcast, Barry, Ethan, Josh, Dave at screengeeks.com. And we'll catch you in 2 weeks. I might even put up Barry's reviews of a couple of movies for Wild 105 if I can get the okay.
Cool.
Just for something to listen to for next week. But until a couple of weeks from now, this is Dave.
Oh, I was going to say, am I, I need a date or girlfriend, whatever thing. Did we ever set up that email account?
No. We'll talk about that.
If you resemble Mary Elizabeth Winstead and you like horror films, boy, we got a man for you. He's a good guy.
Wow. Okay. Or if you're Mary Elizabeth Winstead and like horror films. All right, then.
Criteria on like a sheet is like, do you like this? And like, are you Mary Elizabeth Winstead? Checking yes or no.
All right, this is sufficiently derailed. So, yeah, I'm killing it now. Everyone have a good Christmas. Have a good, well, I think, no, we're probably going to miss New Year's, too. But, yeah, aww. So we'll come back on the other side. Yes. Until then, this is Dave.
This is Barry.
And Josh.
And Ethan.
Take it easy, everyone.